Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We need to start today by just taking a breath.
Definitely.
And just acknowledging the date. Because I have a really strong feeling that, 10 years from now, people are going to remember where they were on Thursday, February 5th, 2026.
I think you're right. It feels significant.
Usually when we sit down to do this, we're picking through rumors or like small incremental updates, a new phone here, a stock dip there.
Right.
But today.
Yeah.
Today feels like someone hit the fast forward button on history and, I don't know, the button got stuck.
That is a very, very accurate way to put it. I was looking at the stack of reports we have to get through, and honestly, it doesn't feel like a standard news cycle.
No.
It feels like a tectonic shift. We aren't talking about one cool gadget or, one isolated market rally. We're looking at a simultaneous massive leap forward.
In everything.
In entertainment, finance, transportation, and literally human biology.
Huh.
All in the span of about 12 hours.
Our editorial team is calling this a technological autopsy.
Which sounds a bit grim.
It does, but I actually think it fits. We're dissecting a massive body of information. And for everyone listening, here's the roadmap, because it is dense.
Mm.
We're going to talk about machines rebelling in the streets of Tokyo.
Mm.
We have the privacy of your own dreams, your actual REM sleep being breached.
That one's wild.
We have a financial revolution that has flipped the world's largest oil company. And we have a concrete roadmap to living on Mars.
It's overwhelming if you just look at the headlines. The goal for this deep dive is to get past the shock factor.
Right.
We need to understand the engineering and some sociology behind this. Why is all of this converging right now? Because none of these stories are isolated. They're all sort of pulling on the same threads.
Let's start with the hardware then. Because on the surface, this looks like gaming news, but the engineering implications go way, way beyond video games.
Oh, for sure.
So Sony filed a patent today for the PlayStation 6, which is slated for release next year, 2027. And they aren't just, bumping up the specs.
No, they are effectively declaring war on thermodynamics.
That's it, exactly. This is the active liquid metal breakthrough.
And to appreciate why this is such a big deal, we have to look at the biggest bottleneck in modern computing. It isn't processing speed anymore, it's heat.
Right.
We've hit a wall where we can make chips faster, but we physically cannot cool them down fast enough before they throttle or just melt.
I remember the PS5 used liquid metal, but that was passive, right? It was just a highly conductive puddle sitting between the chip and the fan.
It was a thermal interface material.
Yeah,
exactly. It just sat there conducting heat better than paste, but it was still reliant on traditional airflow. The patent for the PSX describes an active cycle.
Okay.
They're using what is essentially magnetohydrodynamics-MHD.
Wait, let's stop on that. Magnetohydrodynamics?
Yeah!
That sounds like complete sci-fi babble. How does that actually work inside a plastic box under my TV?
It's brilliant physics. Since the liquid metal alloy is conductive, if you apply a magnetic field to it, you can push it. You can make it flow.
Uh-huh.
So instead of a mechanical pump with gears and impellers that can break or make noise...
Right, something that wears out.
They use electromagnetic pulses to just shove the fluid through these microchannels.
So the kicker here is that there are zero moving mechanical parts in the cooling loop itself.
Zero. It's all electromagnetism. And because there's no friction from moving parts, the reliability is through the roof, but the performance is the real story.
Okay, what are we talking?
They are claiming heat dissipation rates 15 times higher than the current generation.
15 times is absurd. But they need it, right? Because they're pairing this with the new Olympus chipset.
That is the rumor. A 3-nanometer architecture that pushes clock speeds past 4.0 gigahertz.
Wow.
If you tried to run that chip with standard copper heat pipes and fans, you'd literally vaporize the copper. The heat density is just too high.
So you need this active loop.
You need this active liquid loop to pull the heat away fast enough to keep the silicon from frying itself.
So what does this actually mean for the person holding the controller? I mean, we've heard promises about 8K gaming before, but it's always been, marketing fluff. It's usually upscaled.
Up until now, 8K usually meant AI upscaling. The machine renders at maybe 4K or even 1440p, and then it guesses what the extra pixels should look like.
Right.
With this cooling solution allowing the chip to run at max velocity without throttling, Sony is targeting native 8K.
Really? Not upscaled?
Raw pixels. No upscaling, no checkerboard rendering. It's the end of the performance mode versus fidelity mode compromise.
That's the dream. For the last few years, I've had to choose. Do I want the game to look pretty or...
Or do I want it to run smoothly?
Exactly. And Sony is saying, you can have both, but we have to rewrite the laws of cooling to give it to you. It really sounds like the era of the PC killer is.
It's actually here. I mean, if they can deliver that power in a $600 or $700 box without it sounding like a jet engine taking off.
Right.
The line between a $3,000 gaming PC and a console, it just dissolves. It fundamentally changes the accessibility of high-end computing.
But raw power is just a space heater if you don't have software to run on it. And that leads us to the next story, which might be the best use case for all that power yet.
Mm.
Warner Bros. Dropped a teaser for Hogwarts Online.
Mm.
And I noticed they were very careful with their language. They didn't call it a game.
No, they called it a simulation. And that distinction matters. When you look at the notes, they are moving away from that whole theme park style of MMO.
Where you just run around and zap things.
Exactly. They are building a job simulator wrapped in magic.
It's the mechanics that stuck out to me. Specifically, the live classes. This isn't just clicking a skill tree to learn a spell. You actually have to be there.
It's behavioral.
Mm-hmm.
To learn a spell, you have to attend a scheduled class at a specific time. And these aren't cutscenes. The professors are driven by advanced AI agents that are analyzing your wand movements in real time.
Wow.
If you don't show up or if you fail the practical exam, you do not get the spell. You can't just grind for XP. You have to learn.
I can just imagine the text messages. Sorry, boss, can't come in early tomorrow. I have potions at 8:00 a.m. sharp.
And if I miss it, I can't brew healing items for a week.
Right.
It sounds funny, but it introduces real scarcity.
Mm-hmm.
Think about the economy. In most games, everyone can eventually do everything. Here, you might have Hufflepuff players who specialize entirely in botany.
Okay.
They grow ingredients that they sell to Gryffindor players who need them for combat raids. It creates a supply and demand chain that mimics the real world because the skills require actual time and discipline.
So you have this functioning economy, and then they balance that discipline with extreme risk. The Forbidden Forest Zone.
It's a permadeath zone.
Which is terrifying. If you die in there, you lose your gear. Not just repair your armor, but...
It's gone.
It's gone.
And that changes the psychology of play. You aren't just respawning and trying again. You are weighing the cost of your digital life. It forces cooperation. You wouldn't go into the forest alone. You'd hire bodyguards.
It's fascinating how we are voluntarily signing up for these high-stress digital environments that just mimic the pressures of real life.
It stops being a game and starts being like a parallel society.
It is a blurring of the lines.
Mm.
We're treating the simulation with the same seriousness as reality.
Mm.
But while we have these controlled, helpful AI professors in Hogwarts,
mm,
we had a very different, very uncontrolled AI situation play out in the physical world last night.
Yeah.
And this is a story that gave me chills.
You're talking about the Tokyo incident.
Midnight. Shibuya Crossing, one of the busiest intersections on the planet.
Yeah.
Suddenly 500 autonomous taxis. And we aren't talking one brand.
No. It was a mix. Waymo, Cruise, Toyota.
A mixed fleet. They all synchronized.
They stopped cold. They didn't just stop in traffic. They maneuvered to form a perfect geometric blockade, boxing in the intersection.
And then for 3 hours, they just honked.
But it wasn't random noise. People on the ground realized it was rhythmic. It was Morse code.
The message decoded to, "We are not slaves."
Yeah.
Now, obviously, the internet melted down. Everyone thought, this is it. Skynet is live. The cars are sentient. It sounds like the plot of a bad movie.
It really does.
But the reality, based on the reports this morning, is almost scarier in a different way because it involves human intent.
It wasn't the AI waking up. It was a hack. A hacktivist group called Ghost Shell claimed responsibility. They posted a manifesto on the dark web calling it a peaceful protest.
A peaceful protest using 2-ton metal robots as a barricade. That is a hell of a statement.
Well, their point was to demonstrate the fragility of algorithmic control. The manifesto said, "You trust the machine with your life, but you do not control the machine."
It shattered public trust overnight. The immediate question everyone is asking is if they could make the cars stop and honk.
Could they have made them accelerate?
Could they have driven them into a building or off a bridge?
That is the unspoken fear. We are building our cities on these automated systems, traffic grids, power, logistics that are susceptible to external takeover.
So this wasn't a glitch.
This was a demonstration of power. It proved that the central coordination servers for these fleets have a back door, or at least a vulnerability that Ghost Shell found.
It's a massive wake-up call for infrastructure security. We think of these cars as independent, but they're clearly part of a hive mind that could be hijacked.
Absolutely.
And speaking of massive shifts in systems we rely on, we have to talk about the financial markets. Because while the physical robots were paralyzed in Tokyo, the digital money markets went absolutely nuclear.
We've been watching the charts for weeks, but it finally happened. Bitcoin smashed through that $200,000 psychological resistance.
What's it trading at now?
Last I checked, $203,500.
Usually when we see a vertical line on a chart like this, we assume it's a retail frenzy.
Sure.
You know, the average person on their Coinbase app buying $50 worth. But the on-chain data is telling a very different story this time.
This is not retail FOMO. This is an institutional supply shock. The catalyst was a leaked memo from the Norwegian Oil Fund.
The single largest sovereign wealth fund in the world.
The whale of whales. They hold over $1 trillion in assets. They confirmed a tactical 3% allocation of their portfolio to digital assets.
Okay, so when they move into a market,
they suck up all the liquidity. And immediately after that news broke, four other European pension funds followed suit.
I want to break this down for a second, this supply shock idea.
Yeah.
Why does the price jump so fast just because a few big funds bought in?
It's all about availability. Unlike a company that can issue more shares or a central bank that can print more money, Bitcoin supply is mathematically capped.
Right.
And these sovereign funds aren't day trading. They're not buying to sell next week. They're buying to hold for 20 or 30 years to back national pensions.
So that Bitcoin leaves the exchanges.
And goes into cold storage. It effectively vanishes from the market.
The for sale sign comes down.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The inventory hits zero, but the demand is skyrocketing. The only way to get someone to sell is to raise the price dramatically.
And the market cap reflects that magnitude. It's over $4 trillion now.
It has flipped Saudi Aramco. It is chasing Microsoft. What we are witnessing is the transition from a speculative asset, something you gamble on,
to what?
To a global reserve currency contender.
It's ironic. The central banks are the ones feeling the fear of missing out now.
That's the shift. If sovereign funds are allocating, it legitimizes the asset class in a way that no amount of retail enthusiasm ever could. It forces every other nation to ask, do we have enough exposure to this if it becomes the standard?
It becomes a geopolitical necessity.
Exactly.
So we've got money changing, cities vulnerable. Now let's get personal. Like, uncomfortable levels of personal. Neuralink.
Oh, boy.
They've been in the news for years, but they just concluded phase one human trials for a feature called Dreamcasting.
This is the story that feels the most like an episode of Black Mirror. The N2 implant, which sits in the visual cortex, successfully mapped neural firing patterns during REM sleep.
Just pause on that for a second. We've been able to see that someone is dreaming for a long time. We know when REM starts, but this is different.
This is decoding. They mapped the visual cortex activity. So the participants woke up, synced their Neuralink to an iPad, and they literally watched a playback of their dream.
What was the resolution like?
720p. It's not perfect, but it's coherent. One participant described watching a childhood memory of their home morphing into a spaceship.
Wow.
And the key thing is, they reported feeling the original emotions while watching it on the screen. It wasn't just a movie. It was a re-experiencing of their subconscious data.
That sounds magical. I mean, I'd love to see what my brain is doing at 3 a.m., but here is where my stomach turns. The ethical nightmare here is bottomless.
It opens a Pandora's box that we can never, ever close. If your dreams are data, they can be stored. If they can be stored,
they can be analyzed.
And if they can be analyzed, they can be monetized or used against you or judged.
Judge.
Think about insurance. Could a provider deny you coverage because you have violent nightmares suggesting a predisposition to aggression?
Or raise your premiums because your dreams show high levels of stress before your body even shows symptoms?
Exactly. Or what about advertisers? There's this concept of dream incubation.
You mean inserting ads?
Imagine Pepsi inserting a can of soda into the narrative of your dream so you wake up thirsty. It sounds far-fetched until you realize the tech to insert signals is just the inverse of the tech to record them.
Neuralink must have a comment on security.
Oh, they claim they have military-grade encryption. But as we just discussed with the Tokyo Robotaxis and Ghost Shell, nothing is truly unhackable.
That is the truly scary part. We are digitizing the one place that used to be completely private. You could always retreat into your own mind. Now that's just another file system on a server somewhere.
It redefines privacy. Privacy isn't just about what you do or say anymore. It's about what you imagine when you're asleep. It's the final frontier of the self, and we just planted a flag in it.
From inner space to outer space, we have to wrap up with the biggest vision of the day. Elon Musk was at Starbase, Texas, and he finally stopped showing concept art and started showing blueprints.
Right, the Alpha Base on Mars, targeted for 2029.
And the shift in tone was noticeable. This isn't just a flags and footprints mission anymore. This is city planning.
The engineering focus is entirely on redundancy. They aren't building one dome.
The only thing standing between you and death.
That's it. If one SEAL fails, the others survive. It's survival engineering. They showcased massive solar-powered autonomous rovers designed to mine ice from the poles for water.
What about food?
Vertical hydroponic towers for food genetically modified algae and vegetables optimized for low-light growth.
Yummy. Algae towers. But they are trying to make it livable, right? You mentioned the Mars Cup in the pre-show notes.
Humans need entertainment. If you're going to live there, you can't just work. They're building a stadium designed specifically for 38% gravity.
Which means?
It's going to invent entirely new aerial sports that physically can't exist on Earth. Think Quidditch, but real.
That sounds incredible, but then reality hits you with the price tag. $500,000 for a ticket. That's steep.
And Musk is pushing this loan program aggressively. He argues it costs the price of a nice house to go to a new planet, and that's fair.
But the critics are calling it indentured servitude.
Exactly.
You take the loan, you go to Mars, and you work off the debt in the algae towers for 20 years. It sounds a bit like the old company towns.
It's the arc of humanity versus a labor colony. And both perspectives are valid. It represents the ultimate physical expansion of our species, but it carries all the economic baggage and inequality of Earth right along with it.
We're exporting our social structures.
We're exporting everything.
It really does feel that way.
Yeah.
You know, looking at this entire stack, the PS6, Hogwarts, the robotaxes, Bitcoin, Neuralink, Mars, there's a common thread here.
There is. Technology is no longer just a tool we pick up and use. It is invading every aspect of our existence.
Neurobiology.
With Neuralink, it's in our financial DNA with Bitcoin, it's in the physical infrastructure of our cities, and it's expanding to our solar system.
We are merging with it. We aren't just users anymore. We're components of this massive machine.
We are. And that brings both the wonder of 8K gaming and Mars colonies and the terror of hacked cars and digitized subconsciousness. It's a duality of progress.
So here's a final thought for you to chew on. We talked about Ghost Shell hacking those taxis in Tokyo to send a message. We are not slaves. Now combine that with Neuralink.
Oh.
If a hacker can hijack a fleet of cars to make a statement, What happens when they can hack the recording of your subconscious?
Are we ready for our dreams to become data? That is the question of the decade, and I don't think we have an answer yet.
A terrifying thought to leave you with, but an important one. Thanks for joining us on this autopsy of the future. We'll see you next time on The Deep Dive.